A Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
Tēnā koutou I tēnei ahiahi. Kei te whakarongo mai koe ki te reo I rirangi ko tahi. Ko Zek toku ingoa.
Ko Miria toku ingoa.
And you're listening to the Radio 1 news for Rāmere, te tahi o painga whāwha.
Hey Zach, pinch and a punch for the first of the month.
Oh, buddy, do it. Give it here, mate. Give it. Oh, there we go. Okay, we've done that. Now, what do we have coming up on the program?
We've got a lot coming up today. We are speaking to economics lecturer Trent Smith about the new minimum wage increase that comes into effect today. Then Zach's looking into a not-for-profit group, Neighbourhood, and their attempt to break the stigma of men's mental health with their No Small Talk dinner. We'll be talking to Adam Curry from the Free Fares campaign about the government's new transport discount, and we hear from Auckland-based screen producer Alex Reid about what Jane Campion's win at the Oscars mean for New Zealand filmmaking and women's filmmaking. And finally, we have the astrology report and a chat with the general manager at the Otago Farmers Market about what's hitting the stalls tomorrow morning.
Pretty crazy. But we'll get into all that soon. You know, up first, we have some music. We have none other than Walker and Royce with Sophie Grophy in their song My Own Thing. Coming up after that, we have some news and weather from none other than Bonnie Harrison. So stay tuned, gang.
Shut up. Just trying to stop a homie from elevating. Oh lord, have mercy. I call myself a thug, cause I ain't girly. My life ain't straight, nigga, but it's curly. Looping through everything, trying to get to know me. It's gonna be a heavy journey. I'm a and killer attorney. I'm a and killer attorney. Now wait a minute, why you always tripping? Why you always spitting when you always yelling? Turn the shit to a freaking waterfall. My squad be lit, we be going overboard. We be turning up till Monday, turning up till Tuesday, turning up till Wednesday, my homies we lit. All week, turning up, all week, turning up, all week, turning up, turning up, my and thing. to the beat, 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 to the beat.
Welcome back to R1 News. That was My Own Thing by Walker and Royce. Coming up, we have economics lecturer Trent Smith in the studio speaking to us about the new minimum wage increase. But first, here's Bonnie with the bulletin.
This is the news on Radio 191 FM.
Kia ora koutou, this is your R1 News bulletin. It's 11:09 AM. Ko Bonnie Aho. Public transport fares are being slashed from today for the next 3 months as part of the government's response to prohibitively high fuel prices. This brings all Dunedin fares to $1 on the B-card system. The minimum wage is also increasing today from $20 to $21.20. Police and citizens alike are bracing for another protest in Wellington today. A resurgence group of the original Parliament protesters, calling themselves Unite, have been advertising a 14-day rolling event staged across Wellington, with comms being kept secret in an attempt to avoid being removed by police. The Pipitea campus of Victoria University has been shut preemptively. Tā Tipine O'Regan has been named New Zealander of the Year. O'Regan was an instrumental part of the landmark Ngāi Tahu Waitangi Tribunal settlements in the 1990s, leading negotiations as the chair of the Ngāi Tahu Māori Trust Board, for which his iwi were restored provisions over taonga and mahinga kai. He now serves as the Assistant Vice-Chancellor Māori at the University of Canterbury. Tā O'Regan celebrated with whānau at a private ceremony following the cancellation of the New Zealander of the Year awards ceremony. That's the news. Now for weather.
The Radio 191 FM weather.
I tēnei rā in Ōtiporti, we have a high of 14 degrees. We have scattered rain throughout the day today, low cloud, and a low of 8 degrees overnight. In Āpōpō, Saturday, we have a high of 19. The temperature's coming back up. We'll have sun throughout the day and a low of 11 overnight. And that's your weather.
Thank you so much, Bonnie. Up next, we have The Working Man's Song by Boom Band Crayway.
Why, oh, why, oh, why?
We'll be right back.
Kia ora, you're listening to the Raumere News Show here on Radio 1, Te Reo I Rerangi Kotahi. We just heard from the Working Man song, the Boom Band Crayway with the Working Man song, and Amar Jamal with Perfidia.
Yes, we are in studio now with economics lecturer Trent Smith. The minimum wage rose today for the fifth successful year, up by 6%, and it now stands at $21.20. Morena, Trent. Happy Morena. Financial New Year. So this increase, it still doesn't match the living wage, which is currently $22.75. So how much of an impact will the $1.20 raise actually have?
That's a good question. In economics, we tell you the first effect of a minimum wage is that, low wage workers get paid more. But then we would quickly tell you, wait a minute, right? And this is what we teach in first year is, it also could mean less jobs, right? Like employers have to pay more, they might hire fewer workers. The good news, though, is that economists have actually looked at the data on this, and that second effect, the disemployment effect, is negligible. Like it's almost not there in the data. It's actually kind of a pity that we teach the simple version of this theory in our first year because it turns out that the data say something else. So what the data do say is that, economists have kind of clever ways of studying this, and the economists in the field who study the data on minimum wage ask questions like, is there going to be decreased employment as a result of this? There could potentially actually be increased employment. There are more complicated economic theories that actually say that it's possible that you could actually have more jobs as a result of minimum wage. Those are very interesting. And that's actually sometimes been found in the data. The place they study this the most is in the U.S. because in the U.S., the minimum wage varies state by state, and it changes over time state by state in sort of irregular ways. So you can look at the data from in many other ways. Like you don't even notice the state borders in the U.S., right? So you can be in a big urban area and not even realize you're crossing the state border, six times a day. But you can find lots of examples where there's been, an increase in one state, increase in minimum wage in one state, but not in the other. And then you can compare what happens, right? This is a great natural experiment, right? It's almost like a laboratory experiment, like what's going to happen on the high wage side of the border after this change. And so they looking at instances like that, they've been able to show that you don't lose a lot of jobs when this happens. And they ask questions about these workers are getting this extra money, where does it come from, right? So the two big places are it could come from profits. Their employer's profits. Employer could just be making less profit now. Or it could get passed through to consumers, right? They could raise the prices to. And it turns out, at least in the service sector, it's mostly the latter. So in the U.S. instances, right, that it's mostly passed on to consumers. That's not so true in other sectors of the economy, like manufacturing. The good news is here in New Zealand, I don't know if it's good news. Here in New Zealand, I think wage workers are something like 80%
of the economy.
80% service industry.
Right.
Right. So this is what, in the U.S., they show that in that industry, wage rises get passed on to consumers.
Do you think that's going to happen here in Aotearoa, New Zealand?
Well, we can only guess. I mean, New Zealand doesn't have all these, dozens of natural experiments over the years like the U.S. does. The best data economists have is from the U.S., from all this state-level variation. There's also been studies in Europe, too. In New Zealand, so like I say, we're only guessing about what will happen in New Zealand. But the thing about New Zealand is, by world standards, our minimum wage is actually very high already. Okay. So in the U.S., there's data on this And, you know, they almost never find they often find a small disemployment effect. Like, there actually are fewer jobs in many instances after you have a minimum wage rise. But it's very small. It doesn't come close to, like, offsetting the, you know, the benefit from the perspective of low-income workers that they get a pay rise. But the sort of the highest minimum wages in the U.S. are, you know, or in these studies, is something like two-thirds of median wage, right? Two-thirds of the middle wage worker in the economy. And the New Zealand minimum wage, you know, this week is going to be about 80% of median wage here in New Zealand. So, and like I say, it's one of the highest in the world. Yeah. And because, like, the data we have from these studies only goes up to about two-thirds of median, we're way out here in the, you know, beyond the frontier of the data on at 80%.
My gosh.
So it's like, that's an important sense in which we can't, there's got to be a limit to this, right? You can't raise wages to the point that everyone in the economy is earning the same thing.
No.
Because obviously bad things would happen. But.
Yeah. So ACT leader David Seymour claims this change will mean businesses just raise their prices or will have to close. Is this true? Like, is it too big an increase at such a short notice? Should there be some kind of step for the government to support businesses?
You know, like I say, my best guess is that mostly what happens is that consumers pay more as a result of this. And then an obvious concern is that, you know, okay, that causes inflation, and we've already got some inflation in the economy. You know, inflation, though, is really just, it's always just a change in relative prices, right? So wages go up, that's one price in the economy.
Yeah.
You know, consumer goods go up, that's another price in the economy. And the inflation statistic we all pay attention to is the, you know, the consumer price index, and it's the bundle of things, goods and services that consumers pay. So it doesn't really include the wages. And so this sort of thing where it's a one-time rise in, or at least just a periodic scheduled rise in low-income wages is going to, you would expect it to cause a one-time increase in prices, right? And that's not the kind of long-term inflation dynamic that we usually worry about. Like, the reason we worry about inflation is that, not everyone's seeing the same price rises, not everyone's getting the same wage rises, but also that it could set up a dynamic where everybody expects the prices to rise by so much every year. And then, as a result, everybody's raising their wages in advance, and it just sort of becomes a self-fulfilling thing.
Like a snowball.
You get stuck in this wage price dynamic, they call it.
Gosh. Well, thank you so much for coming on, Trent. Unfortunately, I think we're a little bit behind schedule. But thank you very much for coming on, man.
My pleasure.
Yeah,
we'll hope to have you on in future segments.
Yeah.
It'd be very, very, very awesome. All right. That was Associate Professor of Economics Trent Smith from the University of Otago. Up next, we have Weary Donut with Manuka Money. And after that, we have a feature about men's mental health in Otipoti. Take care.
Trays to fill. The locals are easy to please. They like
You're listening to R1 News on Te Reo Rangi Kotahi. We just heard Manuka Money by Wiri Donna. And before that, we were talking to economics lecturer Trent Smith about the change in minimum wage. Next week, new mental health not-for-profit organization The Neighborhood are hosting a No Small Talk dinner, facilitating conversation around men's mental health. Zach Hoffman spoke to the organizers and local mental health advocates about providing men's space to talk openly.
We all know someone who has struggled with their mental health, whether that be going through a rough patch, a condition such as depression, addiction struggles, or beyond. The mental health landscape in Aotearoa does not paint a pretty picture, with 1 in 4 New Zealand adults having experienced poor mental well-being at some point in their life. Men's mental health in Aotearoa is particularly distressing, with men's suicide rates and numbers doubling over their women counterparts for over the past decade. The national non-profit organisation Neighbourhood is hoping to foster a space for kōrero about men's mental health in Otipoti through an event it's calling the No Small Talk Dinner. Neighbourhood event organisers Madeline and Louisa Mason told Radio 1 they want to help destigmatise men speaking on their mental health with this event.
So No Small Talk, I guess, is all about helping men break the stigma that they face around being vulnerable and like the detrimental lad culture that we all experience. I know Dunedin student culture is often rife with it. I was a student there in my undergrad degree. If we don't have these initially confronting conversations and we don't create these safe spaces, change is not going to happen at the rate that we need it.
Madeline founded Neighbourhood in 2020 as a means of empowering people through event-based community action and education on an array of social justice and environmental issues. Neighbourhood has chapters in Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland, Pōneki, Wellington, Ototahi, Christchurch, and most recently, Otipoti, Dunedin, where Madeline's sister Louisa acts as a co-lead.
Actually, I've only gotten involved this year to bring the No Small Talk event down to Dunedin. When Maddie founded Neighbourhood, it was in my first year of uni, so I was like trying to navigate first year life in halls with COVID and all of that coming in. So I was like, don't really have the capacity at that time, but now I've sorted my life out. Luckily enough, this summer Maddie said, yeah, do you want to bring No Small Talk to Dunedin? And I was like, absolutely, this will be sick.
The No Small Talk Dinner features speeches from a handful of local mental health advocates, including co-general manager of Life Matters Suicide Prevention Trust, Corinda Taylor. The event also features live music from local band Hot Sauce Club and a meal from Joe's Garage. Madeline says that these lighter aspects of the dinner are crucial for what will be a heavy evening.
It's heavy to do justice to such a debilitating and heartbreaking cause that we need to bring awareness to. And ultimately, we end with hope, we end with live music, we end with a sense of community and this, like, you know, flickering flame to go forth and, like, spread the light and do better for everyone.
Elliot Phillips, co-founder of Mental Health Otipoti, says events like these are pivotal for destigmatizing men speaking about their mental health and providing them a safe space to do so.
I think that it's absolutely fantastic. Any events that raise awareness around mental health, men's mental health, any kind of mental health issue, anything that starts a conversation, anything that is raising awareness, is just fantastic, especially in our like community and being able to see it and feel it and watch people support it and promote it. It's just incredible, raising awareness and destigmatizing mental health, men's mental health in particular. Is so, so important because there is so much room to grow and there's so much work to do there. So we need more of these events and we need more people who want to get involved and things like that. So it's absolutely exceptional and I'm extremely proud of the guys over at The Neighbourhood for doing it. That's awesome. So thank them so much. Thank you to The Neighbourhood.
Mental Health Otipoti is an annual exhibit series which Phillips and other co-founder Johnny Waters established in 2020, a few weeks after lockdown. Phillips and Waters lost their friend to suicide a few days before the lockdown started, and following that traumatic event, the two organised a mental health exhibit in the community gallery space on Princes Street, targeted specifically towards men, which Phillips says was all about destigmatising men's mental health.
We saw some really special moments through both of the shows that we've put on. I think that the main thing that we can help achieve is the destigmatization at those early stages and just letting people have an outlet, a creative outlet, or just creating a space that was, because the first one we did was based specifically at men and we had a bunch of interesting situations happen there. Like we had tradies coming in being like, oh man, I've got bipolar and I've never spoken to another man about it before. This is so interesting. And I think for the main part, destigmatization in those early stages was what we were trying to achieve.
While there are a multitude of causes behind the current state of men's mental health in Aotearoa, Madeline, Louisa and Phillips all point to cultural factors around masculinity as catalysts of repression and bottling emotions. These include long-standing cultural hang-ups that men are cowards for being emotionally vulnerable, or that they should just harden up instead of letting their mental strife affect them in a way that doesn't show brute strength.
It's just that old classic she'll be right Kiwi thing, and then trades and things like that. Like, if you're a tough guy, then tough guys don't cry. It's bullshit.
As well as the No Small Talk dinner, Neighbourhood are also set to launch their Coming Home campaign later in 2022 to promote sexual violence awareness, which Madeline says is particularly significant for students, as one in four students will face some form of sexual assault in their time at university. If you'd like to attend the No Small Talk dinner, which will start at 6 p.m. next Tuesday at Joe's Garage, you can find tickets at neighbourhoodnz.com. If you need someone to talk to, you can free text to 1737 to speak to a trained counsellor.
Alrighty, that was the feature on men's mental health and No Small Talk dinner, which is happening next Tuesday. It is a fantastic event, opening up a space for men to talk about their feelings. Right now, we have none other than Adam Curry from Free Fears on the line to discuss the government's new discounted transport. Kia ora, Adam.
Kia ora, Morena.
Morena, how's it going?
Okay, te pai. We're pretty happy with, I think, how we've started, but we know that it's only a small step, so I guess we're hoping something a bit more.
Cool. So do you think that this is like a win for the Free Fares campaign, this new, half off all public transport?
Yeah, and it's only half off public transport for a short amount of time as well.
Yeah.
So it is a step in the right direction, but it's only temporary, and we know that we permanently need free fares, both for the climate and so that all of us can get around to where we work, study and play. And I guess on climate, winning slowly is losing, right? So I True. Think even with this fare reduction, we know that folks on community services card holders, total mobility card holders, aren't going to be able to afford to get around. So while it is a step, we're not, we need a lot more.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. Do you think that this discount will have much of an impact on those struggling as a result of the cost of living crisis?
Well, absolutely. While 93% of households in Aotearoa own a car, a third of the population doesn't have access to a vehicle. And we know that car ownership's lowest amongst low-income households. They spend around a third of their budget on transport compared to just 8% for high-income households. So, too often the cost of filling up the car and getting to where people need to go comes before the cost of kai. We know that, Māori and Pacifica are twice as likely as Europeans to have unmet need for a GP due to lack of transport. So, when we've been working with all sorts of communities and people already tell us that they can't go to see the GP, they've cut down on food this week, they're just spending it on petrol. One person said free bus rides would be much easier because we wouldn't have to stress over getting enough money for the bus fare to get to school. So, we know that it would make this will make a small difference, but free fares, permanently fully free would make a much bigger difference.
For sure. Now, do you think that it'll be easier to lobby for free fares with this new discount in place?
I think actually it's interesting because it shows how affordable the policy is. I mean, this current policy of cutting public transport ticket prices in half for 3 months is costing just 25 to 40 million, right?
It's not that much. Drop in the bucket.
It's a tiny drop in the bucket, and it's far less than actually we anticipated. It shows that a fully funded, public transport system could cost as little as $200 million per year. That is less than the 3-month petrol tax cut the government's just had.
Oh,
so,
gosh.
So we could the public benefits are just ginormous. Climate emissions, making cities more vibrant, everyone being able to get to where they need to go. It's endless, right? And this is, costing just $200 million a year for everyone. We need this government to get on with it.
For sure, agree with that. Aside from your group, do you think there's much of a political will to enact these free fares?
Oh, massively. I mean, we've heard it. I think we've heard this in the media for a long time. We've heard all about it, and I think 12 councils have signed on to support. It's 12 big councils. We've had 13,000 individuals signed a petition. 70 organisations have spoken in support of this. Unions, all sorts of groups. Leading Tamaki Makaurau Auckland mayoral candidate Efeso Collins has now adopted it as his key policy, and he's the favourite to win the autumn mayoral election. So we know that there is a massive amount of political will. So I think we just need the government to be bold and to do what's needed to protect our collective futures.
For sure, agree with that. Thank you so much for coming on to talk, Adam. That was great talking to you about the new discounts. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you.
Take care. Oof. That was Adam Curry from the Public Transport Equity. The Aotearoa Collective for Public Transport Equity, talking about the government's new national public transport discount, which of course means that public transport is basically halved. It's pretty cool stuff, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, definitely.
Pretty great. I think it's only fitting that we play Bus Stop by There's a Tuesday Now. Up after that, we have none other than a little feature about Jane Campion's new Power of the Dog film and what it means for Aotearoa filmmaking. Be sure to stay tuned.
This is Radio 1 News, or R1 News on Radio 1. We just heard There's a Tuesday by Bus Stop after talking to Adam Curry about the drop in public transport fares from today. Up next, we have a fun little feature. This is about Dame Jane Campion's new Oscar win earlier this week for her film The Power of the Dog, and it was a landmark. Campion is the first woman to be nominated for the Best Director twice, with the feature film being shot across Dunedin and Otago, one of the many new productions bringing their operation to New Zealand. R1 News' Kaya Kahurangi Jameson spoke to screen producer Alex Reid about what this win means for New Zealand filmmakers and what it means for women filmmakers.
Last week, Kiwi director Jane Campion won Best Director at the Oscars for The Power of the Dog, an achievement which has hit all the headlines. But the film was also nominated for production design, set decoration, and sound production, to name a few. Do you think these sorts of accolades will affect 16,000 people working in Aotearoa's screen industry at a grassroots level?
Yes, undoubtedly. It's a huge win. Obviously, there's, you know, like a massively diverse range of productions that are happening all the time, and not everyone is working on that sort of big level. But it's a confidence boost, I think. It signals to the rest of the world that New Zealand is open and running and is a really incredible place to film in, and also that we have so many skilled people working here. So, you know, it's a really, really crowded market, and so anything that we can do to kind of to show what's on offer here is a huge boost. So absolutely, it is really a really positive kind of outcome for everyone. It's amazing.
That's great to hear. And I think when we think of those skilled, successful Kiwi Oscar winners, we often think Taika Waititi and Peter Jackson. But Aotearoa's female filmmakers like Jane, Fran Walsh and Nikki Caro are also really well represented in the Oscar Halls of Fame. Do you think that these successes will impact on the prospects of women in New Zealand's film industry?
I hope so. I mean, you're right. There are a lot of really strong female directors, not enough that are awarded or recognised. But I do think this is a really great time for other voices to be heard, you know, not just in regards to gender. I think there's a desire for that where there hasn't been before from, you know, sort of funders and platforms, et cetera. So, yeah, I think that it's just so, you know, to see Jane as a female director step into a film, which is sort of, you know, traditionally kind of Western male area, and make a beautiful piece of work with so much kind of nuance and emotion, and bring, you know, I'm sure, or, you know, the sort of the fact that she's a female director has brought another whole kind of layer to that film. And that is really fantastic for all female directors, but it's still a battle, you know, it's a real battle for many female directors, to feel like they're being supported and heard. So it goes on that.
Yeah, no, totally. Especially in a country that is so male dominated in the drama film industry. Across the globe, we like to think that our award-winning filmmakers are known as Kiwis. As someone who's worked in television around the world, do you think that their nationality is actually inconsequential on the international stage? Or do you think New Zealand directors and crew really have a particular reputation?
I think New Zealand crew absolutely have a reputation that is really strong. I think it's a little bit to do with the kind of our makeup really is appreciated. So I think we can own that and be proud of that. A lot of people are attracted to potentially working in New Zealand, bringing their films to New Zealand, bringing their TV productions to New Zealand, because they know about how good the crew are and the talent is. So I think that's something we should hold on to and be proud of and keep promoting.
Yeah, definitely. On the topic of that international stage, New Zealand Film Commission representatives are currently in LA holding post-Oscar meetings to let the international industry know that New Zealand is open for business. Do you think there's a feeling internationally that because New Zealand's borders have been closed due to COVID, filming here is not currently viable?
I think what happened was that when world, we had quite an incredible window, really, because we didn't have many cases here. So we were able to be a viable destination as long as people could get here. And that was fantastic. More recently, of course, it's been hard because the rest of the world's been opening up and we've been struck. And so I've closed down. But I think, again, I mean, that's why the timing of this is so good, because just at a time when we're beginning to open our borders again, and so it's like a signal that a reminder, really, because I mean, that's, yeah, everything is so, there are so many people trying to get films funded on an international stage or get them onto platforms or governments trying to get, larger filmmakers to come to their countries. It's so competitive, and so anything that we can do to kind of raise what we do in New Zealand up is really important. And so that's why, the success of The Power of the Dog now is really important, I think, because we're just coming out of it. It's been a really hard 2 years, I think, for many people.
And that relationship you mentioned between government and funding is also really prominent right now. The government is currently reviewing the multi-million dollar grant it uses to lure productions into the country. An $8 million grant was given to The Power of the Dog, which then attracted another $20 million into the economy from overseas, keeping more than 600 people employed throughout the pandemic. Do you think that the New Zealand screen industry will still attract international productions like Mulan, Sweet Tooth and Power of the Dog if the government decides to cancel the grant?
No. I think they know that the grant is really important and that there's lots of other countries that offer incentives that are probably, that are more competitive than what we're offering. So I think that they're aware that we have to, for those larger films to come here, there has to be a really strong economic pull here, and that comes through incentives. So I think they're essential. I would say talking to someone who works in documentaries, which is mostly lower budget, it's a shame that the grants aren't often applied to documentaries, because normally the budgets are too low. So that's a real shame, and that's something that is sort of under discussion at the moment. There's so much talent, and yes, so many good stories that are both kind of local and can be universal and themes, but we need the resource and the support to be able to make documentaries at a big enough scale to be taken seriously internationally. And I think there's work to do in that area.
Ngā mihi, Alex. Thank you so much for talking to me.
Pleasure. It's a pleasure. Really lovely to talk to you, Kai.
Oh, big kia ora to Kai Kahurangi Jameson for speaking to Alex Reid and talking about to her about what this Oscar win means for New Zealand filmmakers. It's a very cool little feature. Up now we have a new segment, Off to Market. We'll be speaking with the General Manager of the Otago Farmers Market, Michelle Driscoll, right now. How are you going, Michelle?
I'm good, thank you. Nice. That was interesting, that chat with about Jane Campion.
Yeah, very, very interesting. It's a great little film that came out. But anyway, we're here to talk about the farmers market. I'll let Amelia take it off.
Yeah, so there's no more limits on outdoor gatherings. Did you see a big boom last week at the farmers market?
Well, we've actually had, for quite a while now, we've just been monitoring numbers in, but we've been allowed larger numbers in, so as long as they kept their distance. So that didn't make a huge difference, but it felt really jubilant, really, the fact that I think people thought, oh yay, there's a few restrictions that will come down, which is good. But we're still encouraging mask use at the moment as well, just while we're kind of at this level here in Dunedin.
Yeah, of course, but that sounds nice. Mm. So do you want to tell us about what's in season at the moment? What should we be buying tomorrow morning at the farmers market?
Well, there's still heaps of stone fruit. There's still, it'll be probably the last weekend of apricots, last weekend to two weekends of apricots, so I'd get in fast for those because they're always amazing. And there's lots of pears and, the peaches and pears. They're all about $2.80 a kg, which is actually a really good price.
Wow, yeah.
Better than the supermarkets, and you're getting something that's freshly picked as well and not paying for the middleman, which is great. And also we'll have figs this weekend, which we'll only probably have figs this weekend and possibly next weekend, so they're like gold.
Wow, yeah, special edition.
God damn, figs dropping into the chat, that's awesome. Yeah. Are there any new stalls at the farmers market this week?
No new ones, no brand new ones, but there's just a really good variety at the moment still, so nothing brand new yet. But there will be some stuff coming up in the next month or so.
Sweet ass. Look forward to seeing some more stuff.
And we've got heaps, like at the moment, like there's heaps of flowers still, so kind of grab those while you can.
Mm-hmm.
And you can get, you know, like a few stems for, like under $5, you could get a nice little bunch of flowers. So it's, that's really economical and it really makes your house.
Yeah, brighten up flat. Your weekend.
Yeah, it's really good. So that's always been a favourite for lots of people, and just all these staples of all sorts. But we've still got strawberries and lettuce, and lettuce are about $3 each at the moment, and collie, they're around $5 each.
Which, oh, mate, can't beat a good cauliflower.
I know, and it's quite, they're actually really big, so they actually go a long way in a meal, so that's good. And like tofu, you can get a bag of tofu.
Oh, mate.
For $5 a bag, which is a good deal.
Is that like locally sourced or locally processed tofu?
Yeah, the thing is we're an authentic farmer's market, which means that everything's got to come from within the region and the Central Otago region and the Dunedin region. So it's all as local as possible.
That's fantastic. We're quite coming to the end of the news hour here on the Radio 1. Thank you so much for coming through, Michelle. It was great.
You're
speaking
welcome.
To you.
Thank you.
Awesome.
See you
tomorrow.
Week.
Okay.
Yeah, see you next week, Michelle. Take care. Alrighty, that was Michelle Driscoll from the Farmers Market talking about what's fresh, what's up, what's new. It's pretty fantastic. Up next, we have the Wiggles with the Elephant Tame Parlor cover for Triple J. It's fantastic, wouldn't you say, Amadea?
Yeah, so excited for this song.
I'm very much excited. Coming up now, and then we'll have a little outro later on. Take care.
Like
Thank you so much for listening to the Friday News Show. We've had quite a diverse program, haven't we, Emilia?
Yeah, it's been full of fun stuff. We talked to economics lecturer Trent Smith about the minimum wage.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I talked to some people running the non-profit organization Neighborhood, who are running a mental health awareness event next Tuesday at Joe's Garage, which is pretty awesome.
We heard from Adam Curry about the half-price public transport fares.
Had none other than a little feature about Jane Campion's Oscar win and what it means for filmmaking in Aotearoa.
And we also heard from Michelle Driscoll from the Otago Farmers Market for our weekly segment, Off to Market.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more at r1.co.nz or wherever quality content is found.